The Jerry Doyle Show.
Anita Finley back on the program with us. Actress, blogger, EpicTimes.com contributor, and author of Dirty Words on Clean Skin, a book that spent 16 weeks. Number one position on Amazon.com's Women in Politics list, her latest at EpicTimes.com. The headline, GOP strategist Frank Luntz accuses President Obama of, quote, ruining the electorate? The electorate. Anita, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
I got a little Irish on the title there. Ruining the electorate there. I had Frank Luntz on the program when his book came out, Words That Work. And he was a very good guest, a very interesting guy, a very smart guy. But in what you write about at EpicTimes.com is that apparently he's absolving himself of the monster that he helped to create, which is division. Franken-Luntz, as I refer to him, because Words That Work predominantly worked for the GOP in pillaring the Democrats, not that the Democrats haven't done the same thing in reverse.
No, well, but isn't that typical of somebody who is, you know, screaming the loudest? The best defense is a good offense. I mean, they're just, you know, it's an old cliche, but it works. And that's exactly what he's doing. And the article I wrote was in commentary to Molly Ball's wonderful piece at The Atlantic, where she interviews Luntz, and he's talking about how he feels haunted, and he's so afraid of the electorate now, and he's blaming President Obama for somehow ruining them and turning them into people who are very reactive and divided, and, you know, black versus white and young versus old and male versus female and all of this. And it's just as if to say that the Republicans did not win elections on the basis of wedge issues. I remember
sure.
these elections where I was campaigning and, you know, making get out the vote phone calls. And I remember what it is we were fighting about. And I also remember, and by the way, I say this as somebody who has been most critical of the Obama administration. But the fact is that the Bush administration before it was doing exactly the same thing. And when in the run-up to the Iraq War misadventure, anybody who did not just jump with full-hearted support was called a traitor. I mean, there was no mincing words about it. You were called a traitor, and you do not support the troops. And this is ridiculous. And the example I used in the piece is that's like, you know, a man asking a woman out on the date and she politely says no and he calls her a lesbian. You know, just as if to say, well, if you don't like me, you must be gay. You know,
it's
a syllogism. It doesn't follow. It's the same thing that Obama did or the Obama campaign did in 2008. Well, if you don't love Obama, then clearly you must be a racist. You
know, exactly.
Both sides do this kind of lobbing of grenades. And I came across a very interesting blog piece. It's in the Election Law blog. And it was asking the question, this came out last summer, asking if George W. Bush and Barack Obama are the most partisan presidents in decades, and it actually had, you know, the ratio of Democrat versus Republican support for presidents going all the way back to Nixon. And Bush and Obama do seem to be the most polarized, but what the article was also talking about is that we have been heading in this direction for, you know, some 20 or 30 years, particularly the past 20 years. And, you know, I posit in the article that I wrote that a big part of that is the mainstream media, that once it was moved over from being a public service into the entertainment division of various networks and they need it to make money for them, then, you know, all heck done broke loose, you know.
Right.
It's like then everything has changed. It's just this is profit making. It's about teasing all sorts of news and creating, as you always refer to, the WWE, you know, knockdown, drag out, fight to the death. So, you know, Frank Luntz is also somebody who helped with Newt Gingrich with the contract with America. And instead of global warming, he used the word climate change. And instead of estate tax, death tax. So he is very good at coming up with incendiary language to do exactly what he accuses President Obama of doing.
One point that you make in this piece, I recommend people read this, epictimes.com. You can get it under the latest contributions from our guest, Anita Finley. You say that distraction and division are also effective tools to keep the electorate under control. Truer words have not been spoken, because you say if you're busy hating your neighbor, you're too preoccupied to notice what the political class is doing. And if the Republicans can keep the Republicans in their camp hating the Democrats and the Democrats vice versa, well, then we never really look at the fact that the entrenched political establishment and the gatekeepers of the status quo are really the problem. And we have more in common with each other than I think the two-party system would like people to believe or figure out.
Oh, bingo. Absolutely. But the other thing that I point out is that Frank Luntz has decided that the, you know, Uber, you know, business people, the CEOs or whoever, they are supposed to swoop down to the rescue and save society from itself or from the politicians, he says, have failed us. The problem with that is that their profit-making enterprise are some of the very same people who are encouraging us to buy everything now and, you know, zero down and balloon payments and whatever. You know, they are also encouraging a hungry consumer class. And, you know, the reality TV, this is endemic. This is everywhere in our right. culture. So, you know, the problem I have with that is that it's not just one place. I mean, you can sort of ask yourself, Jerry, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Are politicians lobbing grenades because that's who they are? Or because it's working in a society where
right.
this kind of behavior gets rewarded, so they see it's getting rewarded, so they think, hey, that's working over here. That's
yep.
working on Jerry Springer or whatever, so why don't I do it?
Yeah, it's true. I refer to it as the chicken and the salmonella egg, because the latter is pretty nasty. But when you look at what does work, it seems as if the flame-throwing rhetoric and the over-the-top aggrandizement of what one side says works and blames the other for causing, it does get rewarded. And there's also another element here with the proliferation of the Internet and talk radio and cable news. There's a 24/7, 365 forum to just castigate the other side and to prop up right. yours without anybody really willing to sit down in a civil, reasonable, and adult way of having a conversation, because not all Republicans have all the answers and not all Democrats are all the problem and the vice versa there also. But I guess if we can continue to keep things polarized and keep people in their gated ideological communities, then that works for the political establishment. But once we start to get our act together and realize that our commonality is what is going to help to make a difference for all of us, until that happens, I guess the game continues the way it's being played.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, in the piece and in also a lot of the other pieces that I write for Epoch Times, I always make a big pitch, not only for civility, but for civil activism. And, you know, I think that people can change their lives just to the tune of 2% by adding one phone call a month, by one email a month, by writing a letter to the editor, by talking to their neighbors, by learning something new. Because, you know, I know even as a blogger all these years, it always upset me when I get some incendiary comment. I rarely do, because I'm pretty civil in what I write, and I really pride myself on staying that way. And I really do feel that when people start with the ad hominem attacks, when you tear other people down, you are really helping those who you wish to combat. You are helping them to win. Because
yeah.
all you're doing is adding to the flame-throwing and adding to the distraction. And all of that din, all of that noise is preventing us from really learning something about the other side that you might actually like. I mean, there are certainly cases recently, they get drowned out, unfortunately, by the bomb throwers. But there are cases recently, too few and far between, where Republicans and Democrats, senators, congresspeople, who are trying to work together to put bipartisan legislation together, and many times it gets demonized before it has a chance to get out of the gate because
oh,
of these destructive forces who use your fears in order to fundraise for themselves. And, you know, we defeat ourselves by this. So, you know, I guess if I'm always beating a drum, it really is about civility. And I always like to quote the late, great comedian George Carlin, who talked about this. He said, "You think you have choice in this country? Here's your choice. Decaf or regular, window or aisle, smoking or non-smoking."
Right.
And I thought that was bloody brilliant, because, you know, he's saying that we are constantly being manipulated. And in many cases, I hate to say it, but, you know, television, news magazines, all of that manipulate us because it is a one-way medium. Everything is coming at you, and you're forced to ingest a certain kind of thinking. And whether you know it or not, it is brainwashing you.
You say in the piece you'd rather all the spinmeisters took a vacation. In the week and a half or so that I took off between Christmas and New Year's, I purposely made a point I was not going to watch MSNBC, CNN, or Fox. I was going to avoid the nightly news, the evening news, the local news. I was going to stay away from all of the tried and true, as you call them, bomb-throwing punditry that's out there. And after whatever it was, 10 days, I don't feel like I missed anything. And in fact, Anita, I feel like I come out of that healthier and happier and more in tune with what the rest of the country is really in tune with, rather than what the professional political class and the media pundits would have us believe the state of the nation truly is.
Well, now you know why we leave our Christmas decorations up for an entire month.
No,
I'm not kidding. I mean, I'm saying that seriously.
Yeah.
I have that beautifully lit tree that, as you know, my husband decorates. I'm not allowed to touch it because he does a perfect job. But when I sit on that couch and I look at that tree, I do. I feel renewed. I remember what's important about family, about the people I care about my friendships. And when I don't listen to all that crap, I feel exactly the same. I never felt happier than over the past couple of weeks when, as much as I like to be involved in all of this, and I, like you, I'm a news junkie, and we're going to keep beating this drum because I think it's worth it to do that. But at the same time, I feel like you feel that turning myself away from it for a couple of weeks was one of the nicest things I could do for myself.
Yeah, and I know another thing that another thing you're happy about is the confirmation of Janet Yellen joining the ranks of the most powerful economic policymakers in the world, the first female to head up the Federal Reserve in its 100-year history. There are opposition or skepticism, I should say, that are predominantly coming from the Republicans. There were, I believe, 11 Republicans joined 45 Democrats in supporting her confirmation. Why the Republican hesitancy in the confirmation? Is it because Chuck Grassley's right when he says she's likely to continue the same easy money policies with the same, if not more, vigor than Ben Bernanke?
No, I don't think that's true at all, actually. I think that Ben Bernanke and she got together and did something very smart in that they already said they were pulling back on quantitative easing, and they expected the market was going to take, or people expected, I should say, that the market was going to take a hit, and instead the market jumped to the news. Because I think there is also a sense from her that there is going to be a steady hand at the tiller. I think that she is very much in tune with the unemployment numbers and really wants to get us back to full employment, and she's looking at a 2% target inflation rate. And certainly, I'm no economist, but, you know, my sense is that people know enough about her to understand that this is somebody who has been prescient about the market and prescient about the economic trends. And I think that they do feel comforted about her. And I really do want to comment about the vote, because as you point out, there were 56 yeas and 26 nays, all Republicans, and we were missing 18 senators, whether due to the weather or, as you say, fundraising convenience. They didn't want the vote hung around them. I really am disappointed in the 26 Republicans who said no. You know, this is not about her winning or being the first woman. I mean, of course, it is a fabulous milestone, and I applaud that, but I was not backing her because she's a female. I really feel that she's the best person for the job. And that said, as Republicans are fond of saying, elections have consequences. And, you know, the president should be able to have his choice, and she is eminently qualified. She is certainly a 10 times better choice than Larry Summers ever could have been. President Obama even got blowback from his own Democratic Party in wanting to push him, because that was clearly his first choice. And I think Republicans don't have any good reason for opposing her, and it makes them look petty. And here's the other issue that I think is important to remember, because you know that everybody fundraises and campaigns off of everything. And I think that these Republicans saying no for no good reason, because this woman is really a thoughtful, reasonable, and a strong hand and has an excellent reputation, for them to say no, that's going to come back to haunt them in a future election. I don't know.
Oh,
so much in the midterms, but in 2016 as being the party that is anti-woman. Whether that was their reason or not, that's going to haunt them, I promise you.
She's also got a good reputation internationally as well as domestically, having served as the vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. Our biggest creditors take some comfort in the fact that she was considered and now appointed.
Oh, absolutely. I think they take comfort, too, because they also sense that she is not as big a friend to Wall Street, that she really does care more about Main Street and that she, you know, would be good with emerging markets. They just I think they feel good about this choice for a number of reasons, which also, you know, look, everything is perception, too. It's not only action. It's how people feel, and that comfort also, you know, what comforts the market is going to help it to grow. So that's another reason why I wonder that Republicans were so, you know, hell-bent on opposing her.
You know, it doesn't make any sense because, you know, typically they'll look at the vote count. They'll have the whip of either party. They'll say, okay, we need X number of votes to pass because we've got this many votes coming from the other side. And then once they know it's going to pass or it's going to fail, then they go to the political tools, the hacks, and they say, okay, in your district, you should vote against. In your district, you should vote for, because that's going to help with your reelect in 2014 or 2016. But it would seem like in this case, where she was going to be confirmed, that the Republicans would have been wise in an effort to expand the tent to not have as many 26 Republicans, all Republicans, voting against her. Because whether it's true or not, perception is reality in politics, and they're going to be perceived as an extension of the anti-woman, right or wrong label that they were labeled with in 2012.
Oh, absolutely. But there's another issue here, too. You know, with the shutdown that just happened, whether someone's looking back and saying, well, you know, Obama wound up extending, you know, pushing back Obamacare and certain restrictions, blah, blah, blah. So were they right? Were they wrong? You know, the public consensus was that they're being obstructionist. And so you don't want to add to that. You know, it's like if you're going to exercise a no vote to stop the president from having the appointment that he wants, use it for something that's a little more, you know, that's a little more reasoned. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I think that also creates a negative perception about Republicans as being the party of no, as you say, rightly or wrongly. However, you know, perception is reality today. And so, you know, we really have to think about that. And Republicans, too, I think that even though we should not have confirmed her just on the basis of womanhood, she had every qualification, you know, no matter what sex she is. But the fact of the matter is, that would have been very smart for Republicans
Absolutely.
To also chime in and say, yay, first woman, isn't that great? And look how qualified she is. And rah-rah, women, you go.
Rah-rah, sis, boom-ba.
They didn't have the votes anyway. Why wouldn't
you? Right? Exactly. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? We got to take a break. Anita Finley, thanks for joining us on the program. Check out her book, Dirty Words on Clean Skin, and her website, AnitaFinley.com, and all of her great writings at EpicTimes.com. Thank you, Anita. Happy New Year.
Always a pleasure. You got one last Happy New Year in.
All right. Thank you very much. Stick with us to wrap it up when we get back.
The Jerry Doyle Show.